Welcome to News Talkin'. This is D.G. Martin. Well, maybe you noticed that there's been a lot of construction going on the Chapel Hill campus over the last few years. Or maybe you didn't notice. It was handled so smoothly that some people who didn't walk across the campus or didn't drive through the campus weren't aware of all that's been done, but it's historic. And two people who are intimately involved in it are our neighbors, David Gottschalk and former Mayor Jonathan Howes, both of whom helped lead the various planning efforts that were a part of this construction, this dramatic increase in construction activity. And now they put together a record of what happened into a book copiously illustrated, wonderfully illustrated with some of the buildings that were built and some that were preserved on the campus. They call the book The Dynamic Decade, Creating the Sustainable Campus for the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, 2001-2011. David and Jonathan, thanks for coming to chat about your book with your Chapel Hill neighbors.
Delighted to be here, D.G. It's great to be with you.
I don't know whether to ask about the construction on the campus or about the construction of the book first. I think y'all would like to talk about the construction on campus. And the thing that knocked the socks off of me in your book is what a flood of construction activities took place, beginning at about the turn of the millennium, based on in large part on the proceeds of the big bond referendum that was passed. But what was it like? Y'all were sort of around when you saw this money come in. Did you have any idea it was going to be?
D.G., if you'd been here and looked at this in 2001, and you would have said that we were going to build 6 million square feet of new buildings in 10 years on the campus, you would have said, no way. Mission impossible. Couldn't be done.
You know, if you
Hill,
said
Chapel Hill politics were such that to get a single building built on campus had to go through a two or two and a half year review period. One building.
You all did a good job of 6 million square feet doesn't mean very much to me. I can't visualize it, but in your book you said it's the campus of Wake Forest University.
A Wake Forest University laid down on top of our operating university, and we kept going while it was happening. So it was a monumental achievement, and 1 million square feet of older buildings were renovated and rehabilitated, and 5 million square feet of new open space and pathways were put in. So this was something that if you'd been here in 2001, John and I were both here, we would have said this couldn't be done.
Oh, no, you wouldn't have either. You would have, because you didn't. When you found out that it was going to be done, you said it's going to be a challenge. Was it a happy challenge all the way around?
Well, it was. And really, to kind of help underline Dave's point, one of the reasons that we were able to do it was because we did have a master plan for the campus that really anticipated, though it didn't anticipate the bond issue, but it certainly anticipated that at some point there would be construction of this magnitude and that we had to find a place to put it. In fact, when Chancellor Hooker commissioned the production of the what we call the 2000 or 2001 master plan, he said, I have to face these decisions about where to put buildings, and I don't have any basis for doing it. Now, that wasn't exactly true because there was a master plan for the campus, but it was out of date and hadn't been updated in quite some time. And so, fortunately, we did have a master plan that was put together at his urging. And even though he passed away before it was completed, it was finished just about the time that Chancellor Meeser arrived. And one of the first things that he did and that we did with him was sit him down and let him see the ideas which were embraced in this master plan. It was all ready to go to the trustees for their consideration and adoption. And he did that. He sat and studied it, ended up liking it, gave some important changes to it that we'll have a chance to talk about later on. But in the end, it was on the basis of his endorsement that we were then able to take it to the Board of Trustees for
their
approval.
Help us understand sort of the master plan, and or maybe if you can, Jonathan, thinking about a particular building need and how it got situated in the master plan. I mean, there were known needs for additional lab facilities in the.
DG. Meeser was a very strong supporter. The other thing that happened was we had a brilliant team of consultant planners that came in. Air St. Gross from Baltimore, Adam Gross came here and just wowed the trustees, wowed the faculty, everybody. He was a terrific planner that led this effort. But one of the big outstanding needs at the time was for science facilities. Our science facilities were in terrible shape. Chancellor Meeser pointed out that they were having trouble recruiting new chemists and other people who came here and saw these terrible old labs. So when that state bond issue for capital improvements for higher education got passed in 2001, one of the big impetus was to get new facilities for science. And the science complex is one of the gems of this plan and of the implementation. Five new buildings built now. 76-year-old Venable Hall, which was leaking and in bad shape, was unsafe, was torn down, and all these new buildings are in there now. So now we have a first-class science complex as a result of this whole effort.
The other driver behind all this was the prospect of dramatically increased enrollment on the campus. It didn't really happen quite that way, but nonetheless, we did have to take more students than we had and had to find a place to put them. And we were under pressure at that time from the town of Chapel Hill to find a place for the students to live on campus, not out in the community. And as a result of that, the motivation for that was then the construction of many, many additional new residential units, both for married students as well as for undergraduates on the campus. So it transformed the southern part of the campus, the area from and around Manning Drive, from South Road down and around Manning Drive. So that was a strong impetus. So that housing, along with the science complex that Dave mentioned, really are kind of two of the critical hallmarks of what happened during this period of time.
We all were just talking about this happy process. I'm interested in some of the controversies, and so maybe I'll have to get somebody else in here to talk about that. Y'all are so happy.
Oh, no, we can talk about it. We'll talk about it.
But I mean,
we can
tell you about that. We're talking about the location of the science facilities, and there was an idea that maybe the African American Culture Center should be closer to the main campus. And was that sorted out by the master plan, or was it sorted out some other way?
That was actually sorted out just before the master plan.
Describe the challenge.
It came before the Buildings and Grounds Committee.
What was the challenge?
The challenge was that the supporters of the African American Studies program felt they needed a building. And they campaigned for it. They had a faculty member who led that, who died just before that, but they decided that they were going to go ahead with it. And they felt it should be on this what they thought of as the central campus, which was north of South Road, about where the new science complex is next to Wilson Library. They wanted that site. The science people for a long time had said, that's next to our chemistry building. That's where we need to expand. So there was a conflict right there.
And was this all by the master plan, or
it was really before the plan. Before the master plan, and so the initial siting of the building that was finally agreed to, and this was in Chancellor Hardin's term, was to site the African or the African American Studies building on the south side of South Road, just next to the bell tower. And it happened to be constructed right over, or was proposed to be constructed right over, one of the last remaining open streams on the campus. And as a direct result of the master plan process and the sensitivities that we were heightened, our awareness was heightened by Adam Gross and others, was that we really ought to preserve that stream. And so one of the things that we did do was to get the siding of that building moved back across that stream so that it could be daylighted, to use the term that was used at the time, and then make it part of this larger complex that includes the new science building, which has just opened up, and the construction around the west end of Keenan Stadium. So the Stone Center, named for that professor that Dave mentioned a minute ago, now sits in this really quite strategic location and is an integral part of the redesign of what was then, prior to that, a barren parking lot of no great credit to the university and really kind of an impediment to the moving back and forth from North Campus to South Campus, from the science buildings to the hospital and so on.
Well, but it was a win-win.
We're visiting with David Gottschalk and Jonathan Howes. We're going to have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking? This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the dramatic growth of the Chapel Hill campus that took place during what's called, in a brand new book, called the Dynamic Decade, Creating the Sustainable Campus for the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The experts on the Dynamic Decade have written this book, David Gottschalk and Jonathan Howes, both of whom were intimately involved in the whole planning and the implementation of the planning process. I persuaded you all to talk about some of the blips, and I think you could say that the African-American Culture Center, that was a blip that wasn't solved during this time. It was done, and that the master plan incorporated the decisions that had been made earlier. How do you follow Chancellor Hooker's direction to make a master plan? Do you just revise the existing master plan?
Well, as Dave said, part of it was getting a good consultant in here who took a fresh look at things, and that was Adam Gross from Baltimore, who just finished work at the University of Georgia and at Emory before coming here, and he really opened our eyes to a lot of things.
Like what?
Well, speaking of the Stone Center, one of the things he was very clear about was that we had this beautiful football stadium located right in the dead center of the campus, and on either end of that were big parking lots, which are handy at times of games, and they certainly provided some parking for on-campus parking for faculty and staff, but they were not a credit at all to the overall ambiance of the campus and beauty of the campus.
So he raises a problem, but how does he solve it?
There's the answer.
There it is.
Brilliant stroke.
What we did was create connective tissue at both ends of the stadium.
Yeah. What Gross came up with, actually, it was a whole fresh look. There was a master plan. It was old. It was out of date. We were looking at another 3,400 students, new faculty. So they took a complete new look at the thing. They said, let's start over again. Let's see what the responsible capacity of the campus is. Where are the opportunities to make changes? One of them was next to the football stadium in the old Ram's Head parking lot. And Adam Gross said, hey, wait a minute. The students have to walk to get to the South Campus dorms. They have to walk down in that hole and then back up again to the hill on the other side. Why don't we build something in there that they can walk straight across? So they put a parking deck with a plaza on top with student dining and recreation facilities and filled up that Ram's Head parking lot. A brilliant stroke.
Yeah, now that's something that at least people who've gone to football games will know, and those who've driven past this, what looks like from the roadside, a gigantic parking garage. On the front side of it is a campus-like building that does. And I love it because it also makes bicycle riding across that area.
It sure does.
Hill-free.
That's right. No, it was a wonderful idea. And the other thing you don't see is underneath it is this big reservoir for stormwater runoff. Right. So it's a green facility.
Did this
facility come
from the planner? Did he come up with all three of these things? The campus center, the parking area, and the leveling of the walkway between North and South Campus.
And Gross's firm actually designed the building. And there were a lot of consultants that worked with him. They had environmental consultants. They had engineers. So it wasn't them alone.
Well, let me just – excuse me for – I apologize for interrupting you. But one of the things that I wanted to ask you when I finished reading your book was, if you had to pick one of the signature projects that really illustrates something about the results of the planning process. There were so many buildings. That's a tough assignment. And maybe this one would be one that would be a candidate for.
Well, my favorite certainly all along has been the Ramshead development because it did provide this connective tissue. It provided for an easier walk for the students from South Campus to North Campus or vice versa. It also provided some important new functions. It provided parking where it was already being used and where it was needed, not only for games but also during the day. It also provided a first-class dining facility to replace the old Chase cafeteria, some people will remember. And it provided a fitness center for the students, which are very much in demand at this point in time. And it provided a better approach really to the east end of Keenan Stadium. So it really did, I think, clean up that area of the stadium and the campus in ways that we couldn't have anticipated.
Well, you're answering one of the other big questions that I had, and that is the challenge of joining the north end of the campus, which is the old campus and is it's got integrity, I guess you'd say, and the newer part of the campus over by the high-rise dormitories and the Smith Center, all and close but not really a part of the medical establishment, a whole cacophony of different buildings and styles and not enough trees and walkways. You solved that partly, and it had to be satisfying to do that. But not completely. How did you feel about that challenge when you looked at it? It must have looked like an impossible.
That was one of the big things that the planners said as they started. They said, we've got this beautiful old traditional North Campus with the sacred spaces that everybody loves, Polk Place, McCorkle Place. And then we've got the South Campus, which is parking garages and health care facilities and automobiles and
high-rise dorms.
And they said, how can we justify, how can we put these two together? So clearly that Ramshead project was an effort for that. Another one that I think it was a magnificent stroke is the science complex and the genome science connection across South Road and up to the medical school so that as you cross now, you cross South Road, you go past the Stone Center, Genome Science. There's going to be a whole park in front of the football stadium there, a beautiful front yard for it. And then you can go up elevators up that steep incline to get to the medical facilities.
So you join the undergraduate and graduate chemical and others, biology and biological sciences, to research and then to the medical establishment so that
It all comes together there. It's actually a very clever plan, and there are several new greenways that are being built that aren't finished yet that will help complete that. There's a bridge across from the new dental sciences building, if you know that one, that's part of a master greenway that comes north and south down there. So there are lots of efforts to do that. That connectivity was a big deal.
One of the things that Adam Gross was very insistent on was finding ways in which people walked around campus. And one of the great maps that was produced was a map which showed the desires
You've got this in your book.
And it's in there. It's in there. And he used to say that, and I say he used to because Adam's still around, but he would talk about how he had these wonderful walks on the historic part of the old campus and in various places. But he said when you got to the hospital complex, it needed angioplasty so you could find a way to get through there. And so we
wrote a rooter.
That's exactly right. So a lot of this was designed to improve the quality of the walk, and it also was designed to improve the connection between the science that took place on the North Campus and the science that took place on the South Campus and in the hospital and medical school complex. And that Genome Sciences building is the physical place where all that can occur, and so it blends not only the physical construction of the building and the campus, but it also blends the programmatic activity on the campus as well.
One of the smart things that the planners did, instead of thinking about individual buildings, they thought about communities. How do we put these together in a residential community where there are dorms, where there are student services, where there are play fields, where there's eating facilities, all within an easy walk? And there's a research community, there's a science community, there are residential communities, there's an athletic community. All of these are thoughtfully worked out so that they're like neighborhoods.
And I'm trying to identify particular buildings as illustrative of what these communities are like. So let's say, what is South Building? What community is it in? How does it fit? What's its neighborhood?
Well, it's an existing area there. It's part of that whole central part of the campus with Old East, Old West, South Building.
So it's not it's the center. It's not the
It wasn't really changed.
It is. And there is to be an arts community that will embrace Old Playmakers, Girard Hall, Memorial Hall, Hill Hall, and hopefully in the future a new music building that will be there on the northwest side of the campus that will really embrace, and I should also say Ackland and the art building too, where the artistic side of the campus can be embraced.
And that was one of the disappointments. There weren't many, but one of the disappointments we had was we had a wonderful plan worked out for that to put underground parking underneath that open space there so that you could come in there and park and walk to Memorial, walk to the Ackland and so forth. And the cost per space was like $40,000. And Chancellor Meeser said we can't afford to do that.
Well, we're talking about construction on the Carolina campus, and particularly during the decade between 2001 and 2011, which David Gottschalk and Jonathan Howes, our guest, called the dynamic decade. And we'll all be back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Jonathan Howes and David Gottschalk. They are the authors of a new book. It's called The Dynamic Decade, Creating the Sustainable Campus for the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, 2001 through 2011. I've been pushing these guys. They're selling all the happy results of this wonderful decade, and it really is. It's a fantastic accomplishment. But there were some blips along the way, and during the break, they've agreed to tell us about one that was close to me because I live nearby.
That's right.
Maybe if you're listening, maybe you remember that the Chapel Hill, that the old graveyard there is a treasure and something that we all want. And then this talk about building a chiller plant next to the graveyard came
and
up.
And parking deck.
The neighbors didn't like it. What happened, Jonathan?
Well, we built it, the chiller plant and the parking deck. And frankly, it came out better than maybe it was originally planned, in large part because of the input provided by the neighbors and the insistence they had on certain traffic improvements.
What was their objection?
I think the objection was to any, first of all, to change, and secondly, to the kind of specific change that was proposed here. There were certainly concerns that it would not be a good neighbor to the cemetery. And there were others who pointed out that the people in the cemetery wouldn't be in a position to care very much about it. But in any event, we came out with was a parking deck that's highly functional and a chiller plant that serves a very important physical need for that part of the campus. And it took what I think was a pretty much a derelict part of the campus, some old tennis courts, and created a courtyard around the residence halls that are near there that really is a credit to the neighborhood, not only to the campus neighborhood, but to the Gimbel neighborhood as well.
Yeah, but it was a big fight.
What was the fight, David?
And the Gimbel neighborhood led the fight. They thought that it was going to cause more traffic for them, that it was going to make it more difficult for them to come in and out of their neighborhood. And so they organized strongly against it. It entered into the race for the town council. They had supporters who were trying to stop this, who were elected to the town council at the time. And they were joined by the preservationists who thought that it was an affront to the cemetery. So it was really a major issue. The Buildings and Grounds Committee, after we looked at the design, we urged the chancellor not to back down on it. We said, we think this needs to go forward. It's important in terms of infrastructure. At the public hearing on it, one of my colleagues from city planning thought it was a moral outrage that they would build a parking deck like that. And it was a highly charged issue. It did come out, as John say, I think it came out very well. The university worked on the street improvements. They put in a traffic signal. They worked out all of the flow of traffic so that it really isn't a problem for the Gimgul neighborhood.
Well, you know, in fact, it's better because of that signal.
Won't get any accolades from my neighbors in Chapel Hill for saying this, but there is the consideration that the University of North Carolina doesn't just belong to the people in Chapel Hill. It belongs to the whole state and has an obligation to really grow, to be dynamic, and that one neighborhood in Chapel Hill ought not to have the authority to stop an important improvement. I didn't really say that if anybody from Gimgul was listening to me. But how do you sort out the responsibility of the university to serve the state versus the responsibility to be good neighbors or to try to satisfy every homeowner in Chapel Hill?
Well, I think that's an underlying discussion that we have in the whole book here. And in fact, one of the really interesting events that took place was a proposal by one of the great supporters of the university in the General Assembly, who was also a university graduate, to withdraw from Chapel Hill its power to exercise zoning control over the university. That bill was introduced. It was eventually withdrawn, but it really kind of crystallized that argument that you just mentioned. What are the interests? Well, clearly the town and the citizens of the community do have an interest in it. Dave and I have both sat on the town side of the council table, but it is a statewide institution. Indeed, it's a national and international institution, and it does have functions and needs which are which transcend that of the local community. And I think what was done here illustrates really a good way in which to work it out. That is careful planning, inclusive planning in which the community is amply represented, but in which the university representatives are also at the table. And in the end, what was created was not only a master plan, but then a regulatory process that respects the town's needs, but at the same time expedites the needs of the university when that's appropriate.
And what they did was a wonderful idea. The town and the university together worked out a new zoning arrangement so that having to approve every single building, instead they approved a 10-year development plan. The university said, this is what we propose to build in 10 years. These are the buildings where this is where we'd like to put them. There was a big debate and public hearing and many discussions by the various advisory committees about that plan, and then that was approved. And so then, once the overall scheme was approved, then the university would just come with a single building and say, we want to put this one here. It's according to the plan. The town manager and staff would review it and suggest any changes that were made. But it didn't take 2.5 years per building to do that. It's really a very, very innovative solution to that problem.
And to give credit where it's due— Chancellor Meeser was chancellor at the time, and even though that piece of legislation was allowed to be introduced by him, he also worked very closely with Mayor Waldorf, who deserves a great deal of credit for her constructive way in which she worked it out so that this kind of process that Dave just described could be invented, and it had to be invented. We had to create something new in which the town's interest could be represented, but which didn't hamstring the university with this cumbersome and endless development.
It had never been done
process.
In the state before. It was a brand new approach, and the same idea has been carried forward to Carolina North, the research campus that's proposed for the university to build, if we can ever get another dynamic decade going. And the plan is there. All we have to do is get the money now. But the same idea is carried forward there with a development agreement, which is even more specific about the responsibilities of the town and the university and how they'll work together.
We're visiting with David Gottschalk and Jonathan Howes. We're talking about their book, The Dynamic Decade, Creating the Sustainable Campus for the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, 2001 to 2011. We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about construction on the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill campus, about relationships between the university and the community as that construction process takes place. David Gottschalk and Jonathan Howes were intimately involved in the dramatic construction activity and planning process that took place in Chapel Hill primarily during the decade after the beginning of the millennium. But you guys have put together the whole process. It's a great story, but it seemed to me that you kept saying that we learned some lessons that might help other people. And so, you've been called upon to consult with another campus that is the beneficiary of some resources so that it can build.
Well, we're available, by the way.
You are?
You're going to have to reach us.
I would say that the great overall lesson is that to sustain a campus, you have to think about preserving the past, building for the present, and anticipating the future. You can't just say, well, we're just going to think about how we build for the present day. You've got to think about how this is going to work going forward.
Is that what the sustainable
idea of sustainability? Yeah, right. Sustainability is an idea in planning. It's usually a different set of three legs for the stool. It's environment and equity and other things. But we're saying it's the past, the present, and the future that you've got to think about, because so many people have so much attachment to the campus as it was when they went to school there. This is the way they remember it. And they say, you're going to come in and build all these buildings. You're going to screw up all these wonderful things that I remember. Don't do that. So you've got to keep that past fabric, maintain it, and it takes some maintenance to get it going again, bring it back to its former luster, plus building some new things, plus thinking ahead to the future. How are we going to make the next step? How are we going to expand? How are we going to take care of the next intellectual challenge that we have to meet, or the next wave of students, and so forth?
And I think the test of that is the alum who comes back, maybe graduated 10 years ago, and decides to walk from Franklin Street to the Bell Tower. And they can do that right now. They can walk along McCorkle Place and past the old well and past South Building and down Polk Place to Wilson Library and to the Bell Tower beyond. And while there are some new buildings around the science complex that one will see on your right, basically the flavor of that walk, the kinds of buildings that you see, the landscape that you'll be observing and walking through, are the same as they were 10 years ago. In fact, they're the same as they were 50 years ago. So the historic integrity of the iconic University of North Carolina campus is still there. And at the same time, we have 6 million new square feet of office, lab, dormitory space for the use of our students. And we have open spaces where they didn't exist before, and more productive open spaces where they did exist, e.g. the parking lots that we mentioned before.
Yeah. And the other great lesson, I think it's already started to come through, is that you really have to work together. The different stakeholders have to work together. So the consultants worked with the students and the faculty and the staff in preparing the plan, and the townspeople who were affected in the adjacent neighborhoods. The university administration worked with the town council, and various officials at the university worked with the town manager and his staff. And so out of all of that came a consensus that we have met the needs of both sides here, and we are going to move forward with this effort. And it didn't necessarily have to happen that way. It might have gotten derailed from the beginning with the threat of taking away the campus zoning power by the legislature, would have left a festering sore of resentment for years and years if that had been done. People got together, they worked things out, and I think that is to me, is a major lesson. Let's build consensus on this. Let's look at this thing as clearly as we can. Let's be honest with each other. Let's be open. Let's be transparent. And then let's go ahead and make some decisions.
You know, I was, I can't say I was surprised, but one of the lessons that you all say was learned in this process was the incredible value of the landscape the stone walls, the trees, the lay of the land, which is something that everybody in Chapel Hill would say, well, I knew that, but we didn't really have it on the table as something that required being in the plan and having an advocate to preserve that. And the planning process developed the advocacy groups to protect and enhance the landscape.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that in there. I mean, there were two concurrent studies or adjunct studies that were done, one looking at the landscape, the other looking at the historic trees and plants on the campus. And it helps to chronicle those things, to catalog them, and help people understand
and
how important they are.
And value them.
The thing that I learned a lot in this process, and one of the things I really hadn't thought about, you're kind of aware of it, but I hadn't thought about, is the difference between McCorkle Place and Polk Place. McCorkle Place is basically natural landscape as it might have been seen, or at least some of those trees might have been seen by General Davy and the others when they came here and decided that the idea of a university on this spot was the right thing. Where Polk Place, except for the old persimmon tree that just died, was an organized, planted, landscaped
soldiers in line.
Tree. That's right. And they were all put there. You know, they were not part of the virgin forest, but they were, in fact, all put there. And so I think one of the things that all this does is give you an appreciation of the differences that exist on the campus and how important they all are.
Well, that might be one of the reasons why I paid attention to the efforts that were outlined in your book to preserve the landscape and trees and walls, because I loved that persimmon tree, and I knew it was going to die one day. And then I read, you know, when it died a few months ago and had to be taken down, that there was a plan to put another
persimmon tree right
in that location.
So, and the other thing that was done, I mean, there were two award-winning detailed studies of the landscape here that were very instrumental in the plan. But the chancellor created a design review group that reviewed with every architect every phase of their proposals to make sure that it fit into the campus, that it would be compatible with the existing buildings and the existing landscape, that it would help contribute to this community and neighborhood feeling that they wanted to build. And he was the one, Chancellor Meeser, came up with the idea for this. And he said also, I want to look at architects from all over the country. I don't want to just look at North Carolina architects. We're going to be building, you know, $2.3 billion ultimately worth of material here. Let's try to get the best talent from wherever it comes from all around the country. And he put that forward. And I think that along with the standards, the plan has design standards written as part of it. Mm-hmm. So it goes into what makes a reasonable set of buildings and how to protect the open spaces and how to frame those spaces so that they become like outdoor rooms. So Polk Place and McCorkle Place become these wonderful landscaped outdoor rooms framed by buildings.
Well, have we loaded up the campus now so that there's no more to do consistent with the plan? Is it just would it sink it to build another to get another dynamic decade of construction on this campus?
I think we have just about reached the responsible capacity of the main campus. That is, this plan was seen as probably would take 50 years to build it out, and we almost built it out in 10 years because we had the money. Because the town and the university figured out how to get along with each other, how to pass some new kinds of zoning ordinances, and how to develop consensus. So there's some space left on the campus, but there isn't much on the main campus. Now, Carolina North is the new opportunity area.
Well, and that's another book.
Well, are you guys going to write it, or how are you going to help the people?
Well, at the rate it's going, I don't think either one of us will be around to see that happen. We'd like to be.
Depends on how soon they can get the funds together for it. But it's unlikely that the stars will move in such a way that there'll be a new master plan, new money, new consensus, and all of these things happening at one time.
Well, I wish we had more time to talk. You mentioned the disappointments that you faced when you had a plan for the music and arts, the fulfillment of that neighborhood. And you just had to point out that there's not that much money in music and arts coming in as there is in the sciences. But on Carolina North, there are plans for not just waiting for state money, but no. When the economic situation changes, there can be a dramatic building on.
Yeah, a start can be made on it fairly soon, as soon as the airport operations are finally completed, and then there can be some financing that will allow it to at least to get started.
And there's a very creative plan for a new research building out there that's underway. Right. The planning is underway now. The architecture. Right. And design.
Well, were you guys, what did you call the joiner of the North and the South Campus? Not the flesh.
Connective tissue.
The connective tissue. That's a level connective tissue. I want you to sure plan a level connective tissue for my bicycle between the main campus and the
They're
Carolina
already
North.
Working out the routes for your bicycle.
Right. It'll be there.
They have figured those out.
Well, listen, thanks for what you did in hiding almost to make construction process and planning process work so well, and for the gift that'll last forever for the beauty and the wonderful ambiance of our campus. Thanks for putting it all together in a wonderful book, and thanks for sharing with us today.
Thanks for letting us talk about it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
David Gottschalk.
One of our favorite topics.
And Jonathan House, authors of The Dynamic Decay. Thanks for listening. This is D.G. Martin, Who's Talking. I'll be back here before you know it.